Welcome to Journey to Motherhood, the podcast that has conversations with women who yearn for parenthood and are contemplating or are going through or have gone through so-called unconventional or unspoken of experiences to get there. My desire is that this becomes one of those helpful resources and that the stories of the people who participate will help anyone listening to realize that they are not alone. Welcome back, everyone. We're here today with Jasmine, who I met through a friend of mine. And when we finally met face to face, we'd been talking for years, I think, by that point. It felt like we'd known each other. It felt like we had met before. And I remember saying, but wait, hang on. We haven't actually met in person ever.
<That's>
remember?
<true. laughs>
You know, and it just felt like, you know, there was a lot of connection between us. And so really privileged to have you with us. And I'm so excited that, you know, you have taken the decision to share your story.
Thanks, CJ.
So I'll start with a question I've been asking everyone. When did you know that you wanted to become a mother?
Okay, so all along growing up, I actually thought this was the thing that was just going to naturally happen. So I never thought I was never going to be a mom. So growing up, that was always a thing. But when I got to about 30-something, I guess, I started worrying about it, like, okay, this looks like it might not happen. And I had to decide, okay, so what's going to happen? I'm not married, because that was kind of what was in my head, that you're going to get married and then have children. So round about early 30s, I decided, okay, something has to happen here, because I think it's not happening naturally. And I think at about 38, I went for a visit to a doctor, to my regular GP. And then she's like, have you got any children? And I'm like, no. And he's like, are you thinking of having any? And then I was like, yeah, when I do get married. Then she was telling me that, well, you should know that with age, you might have problems with having children. And that was the first time I actually heard about it. And at that point, I started actually thinking about it.
That's interesting. That's the first time someone had the conversation with you to say, the older you get, the more difficult it will be to have a child. So at least a medical person having the conversation with you.
And I was 38.
How did that make you feel?
I was like, this is information that's new. How did I not know? I know so many things, but how do I not know that?
You know, and you're an academic. I mean, just you're an academic. You're well read.
You know.
But you didn't internalize this, because that's not the narrative that you grew up with, I suppose.
Yes, we were told you were just going to get married and it happened naturally, so you never really gave it time. You never thought about it.
Okay, so then you meet with the doctor. The doctor says this, and then what? What happens next?
Okay, so you mull over it, you go home. It's not kind of forefront, but it is now coming into your head. You are starting to think about it. So I'm like, okay. So I'm 38, and the doctor tells me that there is a possibility that there's a problem. And then, so here I am. There are no real potential relationships going on there. So that's likely not to happen. And obviously in my head, that was the only way one was going to have a baby anytime soon. So then trying to think, so how did I actually end up going to a fertility doctor? I think, if I remember well, the doctor did suggest maybe you should actually just go for tests at the doctor, the fertility doctor. There's a specialist. I'll give you numbers for them, and you can go start seeing them. And so after a couple of months, I think, made an appointment with the fertility doctor. Not that I had a plan in my head at all, but went to the doctor for just tests. And I think that's kind of where everything began. There was no relationship. There was no plan.
You'd assumed it would happen naturally, in the natural course of things.
Exactly.
And so you went to see a fertility doctor. Tell us about that. What was that like, and what do they do?
Okay, so when you get there, they do their ultrasound, they do their scans. So they do scans and tests and hormonal tests and so forth. And when they did that, so they told me that they are worried with the feedback. They're worried about the hormone that's related to the aging of your eggs. So they're saying that, you because of age, your hormone is rather low, and you might struggle with having children quite a bit. And so I internalized this. So he actually was a gentleman. He tells me, so you are running out of time. And that really did get me in a panic.
Mm.
And at that point, I think I decided, okay, I was in a semi kind of relationship, but it wasn't really anything much that would go anyway.
Mm.
So when I was thinking, do I really want to have a child with this person? Not really. Anyway, then that's kind of when I decided, okay, I actually went and searched on the internet and found the sperm bank.
Mm.
I went and I looked around, and it was just curiosity. I wasn't even sure. I think it was a whole mess in my head. I was just trying to look for information because it's not all out there. I think when you're around, or at least growing up in my culture, there was really no information. You just looked around by yourself for stuff because it's not discussed. So I looked around and I looked around. I did try to have a child with this guy. Didn't happen. That was around 39 now.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. So, then I went to the relationship that I'm in with my partner now.
Mm.
So there was a change in relationships, and I was very certain about the guy I'm with now. And so we went for an artificial insemination, the IUI, and that didn't take.
Sure.
Okay. So, well, I can't say I actually had many procedures happen, but it didn't take. It still didn't feel that like. So anyway, so we went. Did the IUI. He wasn't too into it. He's also coming from a background which is very traditional.
Mm.
And so I had to explain a whole lot of things to him. And anyway, he was quite cooperative. Went and we tried it out. It didn't work out. And then when we came back for the review, the doctor says, okay, so do you want to try another one or keep trying another one? Or do we move on to a more expensive procedure? And he goes on to explain what in vitro fertilization is. So after the explanation, we say, okay, what we want to do is we're going to go and save money for this thing. Then we'll come back. So off we went for saving.
It's not cheap.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's very expensive. So, okay, I want to take you a little step back and then we'll come back to the IVF and the process. I mean, so what was the conversation with your partner? You know, did you talk about this first of all with your first partner in terms of, I want to have a child, I might have difficulty, or was it just, you know what, I'm just going to try and see if it works? And then what was the conversation with, you know, the partner you're with now to say, let's go and, you know, and actually intentionally try and have a child?
Okay, with the first guy, he was Fira, the fecal. No, I didn't actually discuss it.
It was like, let me just, I'll do the woman thing here.
I'm going to just discuss anything with him. There was no discussion. It wasn't even going to be productive, so no, it wasn't even discussed, which is why I wasn't even sure I wanted to have a child with this guy. But anyway, I was only certain with this guy that I'm with now.
Mm.
So we actually discussed a very level-headed guy. So we actually discussed after a while, no, we're not having babies. It's not happening.
Yeah.
It should have happened, but it hasn't happened. It's been over a year. So now we're talking about, I think, when I was about, was it 39 or 40? We are like, no, it's not happening. It should have happened. It's now like over a year now, about a year now. And there's still no baby. We both don't have babies, and he did want children. He wanted children. I mean, he's 52. No, at the time he was 50. So he was like, there's no children. We agreed that we do have a problem. Although he was still thinking it should have happened naturally, just like I thought, what went wrong? Why is my body failing to do what it's supposed to do? So anyway, he agreed. I mean, he did agree. We went to the doctors together. We listened to the stories. So right from the start, we were kind of hearing the same stories from the doctor, which helped.
I'm going to ask you something, and I know it's sensitive, and you know, you can decide to answer, not to answer.
Okay.
I know you were getting tested through all of this. Was he also getting tested?
Yes, he was.
Was it a mutual challenge on both sides, or was it that the infertility was sitting with you?
After the tests were done, the tests were done on both of us, and I mean, from our perspective of the test, we didn't really, we took it in a stride. We went with what the doctor did. But when the reviews came back, the problem was really with me.
okay.
age with me, there was nothing that was picked up on his side.
Okay. All right. And so you're going down this journey together. And so now you were telling me about the IVF. So you're saving for IVF. Talk to me about that journey.
Okay, so we go home and we decide, okay, so we've looked at all the quotations. And yeah, it's not cheap. So we think, okay, so let's start saving money. So we save money, and it takes us a whole year, saving like 100,000+.
Mm.
If I remember well, we were at about 105,000 at the time, by the time we actually then went ahead and started going to the doctors for the actual IVF. Mm. So again, at this point, I've already been told that my hormone that is related to aging is already too low. Because the IUI had not taken, the doctor explained that you could try with yours, but with all that money, it might just go down the drain.
Mm.
So I figured I couldn't actually save this money so many times. So we kind of discussed and we said, okay, let's go with an egg donor.
Wow.
So right from the start, the very first IVF cycle, we decided, no, we are going with an egg donor because the chances without... We're already too slim, from the way the doctor had described it. So we went to, that's another one. You go to agencies online and you're picking and all that. That's a whole traumatic experience. But anyway.
but I mean, it's interesting. And this is, we don't talk about this, right? Because there is some trauma in it. And as much as it's also exciting because you now have a potential solution, is the level of trauma and the level of anxiety involved? What was that like? What selection process did you use?
Okay, besides selecting, at this point you are quite excited that there's this opening. The next day you are very depressed that you have to make this choice, and again it hits you that things have failed. And anyway, so it's actually a roller coaster. At that point, you're just happy one day and said the next day, but you're still going through the list of potential donors. So anyway, because it has to be done. Somebody has to do it. So we go through these donors, and okay, my partner says, okay, choose, and then tell me the shortlisting. So I go and I shop. I shop online, look around. I'm not so sure. Okay, so what do you actually choose on? Okay, I'm big on education, so I'm like, okay, I think I'm not too big on everything else. I just think somebody who looks like they have an intent of getting educated somewhere along the line. Okay, I'm big on education. So that was kind of high on my list there. And I shortlisted a few donors and it wasn't actually complicated from there. I mean, in terms of choosing, there were quite a number of good ones. So, I think so.
Were you using a local agency or international?
Well, people would go with... Well, for me, financial was actually a deciding factor. So I wasn't exactly in a position to choose from international ones because it's more expensive to go with an international donation agency. So I went to a local one.
Okay. And you found a good selection, and I mean, was race an issue?
We were definitely looking for a black donor.
Okay.
In fact, we were looking for a black donor, and ideally, we wanted a black children who fit within our family. Yeah. Okay, I don't know why, but that was kind of what we were thinking. Black children will fit in and people won't ask us too many questions. That is actually the reason. You don't want people asking you too many questions.
I think, what conversations are you having at this stage as the two of you, as well as maybe with your family? Did you confide in anyone beyond just the two of you?
Okay. Actually, now that you've asked, I remember when I did go to the doctor and came back, the discussion then came up again later. I'd forgotten that part. But this discussion came up later with my sister. She's like, are you actually thinking of having children at some point? I don't know where she had heard this whole time is running out business as well in Zim. We don't discuss that stuff. But anyway, she heard it somewhere. So she was like, you know what? You should really go along this path. So I had my sister to confide in. So all along from the start, from the beginning, my sister has always been there on this journey. And so all my discussions and choices and what I'm going through, that was the good thing. I had my sister to talk to, but not anyone else. The rest of the family, have been in the blind ever since.
No, and I can understand, because sometimes people aren't ready.
And judgmental.
And they're judgmental, right? So, and I mean, it will be interesting, because I'll ask you this towards the end, around what is the story you tell your son, you know? But I'm going ahead of myself. This is always the challenge when one knows the story.
I want to get all of it.
Okay, so you shop.
So I go shopping online, well, shopping in terms of choosing, and I look at all the egg donors, and I pick up a donor. I think I picked up a donor, a lady who was mixed race at the time, but looked more black than any other race. But anyway, that was fine with we had, I think, three to choose from, and then we settled on one.
Mm.
At the end, we settled on one who was mixed race with my partner. So we settled for her, and it was okay. It was, like I said at the beginning, it was traumatic, the choosing, but eventually you are actually quite happy, and you go back to this website daily to be sure that that's actually what you want every day. Yeah. I went on that website every day, and I read that profile every day. Am I really sure? Then I think, did I check that other thing? Okay, let me go check again. When you go shop again, but you're trying to check it against the one you've now selected.
Wow.
But then you don't tell everybody that's what you're doing, because of course it's your own little thing you're doing. But I did go to the agency's website every day. I was the most regular visitor.
Wow. And what sort of information is available on the website about the donors?
They've got information about their age, the level of school, and these ladies are... They're youngsters, mostly in the early 20s, so they haven't quite ventured out too much.
Mm.
So what you're working on is their potential for life, generally. Mm. So they'll tell you where they're looking to go towards in terms of education, in terms of just their hobbies, in terms of... So you're trying to read out this person's personality. Mm. And in my head, I was thinking, okay, you want a child whose personality doesn't completely clash with yours.
Yes.
Okay, in my head, I think I was thinking the child will probably pick up all these personality traits that the donor has.
Mm.
So I think we need to find personality traits that kind of match well with myself and my partner.
Mm.
Sounds like someone who would fit exactly with us, sort of.
Mm.
So that's pretty much what I was looking at, and you didn't want... Okay, I'm an introvert. I wasn't going to look for an extrovert.
You would be surprised.
Exhausting.
You would be surprised. Children surprise you.
Okay,
they
I don't know.
Children are born complete.
Exactly, you know. in my head, I thought, okay, if you take an extrovert, you're ending up with a whole extrovert, and yeah, that's what you chose.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't know. It might not even add up to that. But I was like, okay, look for the quieter people.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, now we'll wait and see. So
we'll wait and see.
That's what I was thinking. We'll wait and see. But again, we are talking about that IVF cycle that didn't work. So
yeah.
Anyway, so we picked a donor.
Mm.
Then when we were happy with the donor, we went to the clinic and the cycle started. Yeah, so they did stimulation. So they stimulated the donor, and when they finished stimulating, they got like 18 eggs.
Mm, nice.
I think she was 22.
Mm.
They took 18 eggs out, and we were like, oh, okay, that's a good number.
Mm.
So they take 18 out, and then they tell us that of the 18, 14 are immature.
Oh, okay, that's a new term.
Okay, so that was horrible.
Mm.
Then they say of the four that remain that are mature, they've all fertilized, but they're poor quality still.
Wow.
So out of those four, then they say, okay, we'll try with these two. So they take two average quality embryos, and then they transfer them to me. And the other two, in the next day or two, they arrest. So they don't proceed.
Mm.
And that was the end of that cycle. Okay. Oh, yeah. By the way, that transfer didn't work. So that was the end of that cycle. And that was 116,000 rands down the drain.
Wow.
We died.
Wow.
So after a year saving, okay, honestly, I was like, nah, this is not working.
Mm.
I'm not going to save another 1 year. We are discussing whether I'm thinking, should we do one more year again of saving money for just in case?
Just in case.
And if it went down, what if it goes down the same route? So that financially, okay, that really took us back quite a bit in terms of thinking about it. We were like, okay, honestly, I think we were very traumatized by that experience, that first experience. Took a while to get back to thinking because we just went numb.
Sure.
Yeah, so anyway, it's funny that now I laugh about it. It wasn't funny. It wasn't that hilarious at the time.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine. And I mean, the between the two of you, are you having conversations to say maybe we just are not meant to be parents? Or
oh no, that conversation never happened. That we are not meant. We are meant to be parents.
You knew
that was never. That was never an option. That we are not meant at all was never an option. Okay, I did suggest at some point. I did suggest adoption.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't going down well with my partner ever. So that conversation never usually went anywhere.
Mm.
He was just not prepared for adoption.
Okay.
It was emotionally not okay with him.
Yeah.
So it usually didn't go far, but he was willing to go the whole fertility treatment thing, but not adoption. I think it's not part of our, I don't know if I'm generalizing, but not part of our African upbringing so much of adopt. Especially, well, we do adopt in terms of just our community kind of adoption, but this official adoption method is not very, it's not very well rooted within our culture, at least.
Mm.
So it just wasn't something we knew or were too familiar with.
Mm.
And so that route wasn't a viable option.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So then at which point did you then start saying, let's try again?
Oh, we set again for another whole year, not saving, but not trying.
Mm.
And we want to have children, but we don't want to put money in this particular basket anymore.
Because you're afraid to fail again, right?
We can't spend 100-something thousand again on this. It's not like this money is sitting around.
Mm.
So, because it really is quite a chunk of our income.
Mm.
And it's like wiping accounts just to pay for this whole procedure. So a whole year goes by, we do nothing.
Mm.
I think that was 2018, I think. Yeah, 2018, end of 2018 is when it actually failed. Then 2019, we actually sat through the whole year.
Mm.
Then towards the end of the year, we were like, okay, now we need to think about this. What do we do next? Then I had joined, because at that time, I didn't have any other support except my sister and my partner. I then joined an IVF group. I do not know how I got to join it. I think I just searched groups, an IVF group on Facebook.
Yes.
And that I found a group of ladies with similar struggles. And honestly, I think many ladies don't even know it exists. And how I got there, I have no idea as well. It just happened to be one of those days where I thought there could be a group for this thing or something like that.
So you invited me to that Facebook group.
Yes, then I found myself on a very big, no, actually the one I invited to you is a very small group.
Mm.
There's a very big group of women pursuing IVF.
Oh, wow.
Which is, I think at this point, at about 3,000 people.
Wow.
3,000 ladies that are at different points in terms of IVF. And I joined that group and discovered that these are common struggles. I didn't know that they were common struggles at all. And I used to think I was just out there by myself.
Mm.
And then I realized that this is a struggle that's everywhere, and I felt way better. Because then you realize you're not the only one who's been using 100 something thousand. There have been people there using 900,000 to get to where they got.
Mm.
So it's actually not just you specific.
And you become kinder to yourself, I think, when you know that there's someone else out there who's
that's
going through
true.
The same challenges.
And then you can go through it better.
Mm.
You can go through it better. You are more confident that it's okay if it fails.
Mm.
Unlike before, when you really you put all your hope on it, it's okay if it fails now because you've actually read other stories and you realize that it does fail.
Mm. It's not me.
It's not just
who's making it fail. It's not because there's something inherent in my body in how I'm doing it.
Cycles just fail.
Cycles fail.
So I really was glad. I think that was one of the biggest improvement that happened there. Mm. The fact that I actually joined that group made it easier to face any other attempt. Mm. So then just chatting with that group, and they're good for social support and social psych. For when you're really stuck and you're scared.
Mm.
So anyway, in that group, I then met a lady who's in Botswana, and her husband had done an IVF cycle, and they had embryos frozen that they were no longer going to use. So then she approached me in a private message, and she said, "Are you interested? I've got embryos, but I just like your personality, and I was thinking if you're interested, I would like to give you mine."
That gives me a chill. Oh, wow.
Yes. So that just by being part of a community, I actually then bumped into the donors that gave us the embryos.
Wow.
It really was heart-touching.
I mean, it's the gift of life. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. So she approaches you. She says, "We're doing this. Did you go?" I mean, what happens next?
So she explains that, you know what, these embryos are not made by my eggs and my husband's sperm. Mm. We actually also struggled with both male and female infertility.
Mm.
So we used both egg and sperm donors, and we made these embryos.
Wow.
Then we have just had our twins. Mm-hmm. And or rather, she was actually expecting twins.
Mm.
We're expecting twins, and we won't be having any more children. So the embryos that are extra, we won't be using. But I feel like I could offer them to someone, and I would like to offer them to you. And then, of course, he explains that they are mixed race. So that was something I actually have to think about. Because, I don't know, the first time around, even though I'd used a mixed race egg donor the first time around, somehow I felt that they were going to be a bit more black because my partner is black.
Mm.
But this time around, the embryos themselves were mixed race. So so I think, honestly, I had a bit of a hang up on that.
Mm.
A bit of a hang up on that, and how am I going to maneuver around this whole race thing in the future? And for a while, my partner also wasn't too keen because he didn't want to be asked questions.
Mm.
And he was like, we need to be hush-hush about it. So at this point, we still haven't gotten past the, he wants it hush-hush. Then I'm like, the children will know, they'll want to know.
They want to understand.
How do we become mixed race? You're both black.
Mm.
How do you become mixed race anyway? So that's another story for the, like you said, at the end of the, you want to ask this about a little later, I guess. So how do you talk to children? But anyway, yeah, that's a very complicated road as well. So anyway, so what we then did was we took up the offer at the end of last year, towards the end of last year. And it was actually quite quick, and she then signed the consent forms to give the embryos to us. And we accepted, and the clinic asked, "When do you want to go ahead?" And I was okay with that. We were okay with that. So in November last year, we transferred. In 2019, yeah. So we just transferred the embryos, and it fortunately, it worked.
They took.
Yes. And it was a way cheaper process. I think we used within 20,000 rand.
Really? Yes. Is that because you didn't have to?
Because there was no stimulation, there was no making of embryos. This was just a transfer.
Wow, what a blessing!
So it was way cheaper. But I think the only problem with most women is the option is not very available because there are not as many embryos available for adoption.
Mm.
Most people are struggling to give up their embryos. I've noticed over discussions in groups that people are emotionally attached to their embryos, so they're not usually willing to donate them to become children.
Mm. I mean, it's a question I've asked as well as part of this series, and you're absolutely right. I think it's a separate emotional discussion because, you know, in some cases it's almost like giving up the potential for children.
Yes.
You know, so
and giving up children, in fact, people would see them as giving up their children.
Yes, yes. Okay, so the day you found out you're pregnant, tell me about that.
Oh my. I didn't actually, oh no, I don't know. I don't believe it would happen. I give myself the chance that it might happen, but I prepared myself for negative.
Yes.
Because now I cushioned myself with the social support network on Facebook and everywhere, and WhatsApp groups with a group like an over 40s group to make sure that we are all sorted on social support in case this thing goes south. So when we were told that it was positive, I actually went for a test for the hormone. What is that hormone that they test anyway? Yes. To see if the beta test.
Yeah.
So they went and did the beta test, and I had to wait. Oh, that's nerve-wracking for another day or so. No, actually, they called me. Within 2 hours, they called me after the results were out from Lancet. So I waited, and then she says, congratulations, you're pregnant. Oh, my word. I was like, oh, my word, it worked. No, we were ecstatic.
Oh, my goodness.
Finally. And that was finally at an age of 44.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was something.
What was pregnancy like?
I thought pregnancy was going to be complicated at 44, because people say it's going to be difficult when you're at that age, and so I was expecting all kinds of a dramatic pregnancy. I had a smooth pregnancy, pretty much. I was one of those people who was, I was blessed. The pregnancy went so well, okay, with the other than the nausea 1 or 2 days and throwing up 3 or so times throughout the whole pregnancy. I was fine. It went very well.
And I mean, talk to me about this experience of you are carrying your children. Mm-hmm. What is the mental process you're going through? Because you are the carrier, but these embryos are not genetically yours. Is there any sort of emotional, mental, psychological process you have to go through? Or...
at the beginning, I guess, you know what, actually, you know what I think? At the beginning, which is at the choosing part, once you're actually pregnant, by then you, at least for me, I was way past the mental hang-up. Usually, I was already way past the but then they're not genetically related to me. I've already had that discussion in my head before I got pregnant. When I got pregnant, I was past that, and I was actually quite at peace. Well, I don't know if it's true it's true generally, but it was true for me. That discussion of, but they're not related to me, but is it going to be a problem? That didn't really come up throughout the whole pregnancy.
For you, you felt like they're my children.
I was over it. I was at peace with the whole decision, the whole process now. I owned that process, and we were now comfortable with it. The only issue I think at that point is, what are we going to tell everybody else? I think that's probably what you're asking. Yeah. What are we going to think of telling people? Are we going to tell or are we not going to tell? Are we going to tell the children? Are we not going to tell the children? I guess those are the questions you're asking.
Yeah, because what are the answers to those questions? Have you figured it out yet? Have you?
Unfortunately, not. Okay, I'm on the tell side and he's not on the tell side. So there's two sides to that, because I'm like, I think, you know what, just come out clean and tell the children, this is what happened. We really wanted to have children and couldn't have them. And so this is what happened. Somebody helped. And unfortunately, I think I've noticed that it kind of causes my partner discomfort to say it, because it feels like it says they're not his children somehow. So he says, no, you don't tell them. You don't tell them, just keep quiet. Why do you need to tell anybody? Just save the children and grow. They are our children. They don't have to be told anything. Just tell them you're our children. You don't have anyone else. So I think that's a discussion that we've just left in the air for now. It's still not answered.
Because then you give birth to these beautiful twin boys. Do they look mixed race?
They do look mixed race, very obviously mixed race.
Really?
They're very obviously mixed race, so there is going to be a question. So there is a question, and question that has not been answered. What exactly are you going to tell them the day they start asking? So I guess, sadly, that those are the open questions that are not yet answered. And there's a whole lot of discussion over groups of to tell or not to tell and stuff. And there is also another, well, I actually joined a couple of other groups where there are donor-conceived children to just hear the discussions that are there. And you hear that there are some adult children who were conceived. through donor conception, and some are absolutely mad at not being told, and some. So that that kind of nags at the back of my head.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole messy kind of discussion around that, around the telling, not telling business.
Yeah.
And then what if people ask you, besides telling the children, what if people ask you, what do you tell them? And at this point, the babies are still very young.
Yeah.
They're still very young. They haven't gone out much. But people are going to ask. You need to come up with an answer. And I said they haven't even actually come up with what. We haven't actually come up with what our answer is actually going to be. And people, I think the few people that have seen the babies, I think they're too scared to ask.
No, that's always the case, right? So
they don't know what to ask.
They don't know what to ask.
They're just a pretty boys. Oh, they're pretty. They don't know what to ask.
They're beautiful. My eldest, you've seen my older, looks mixed race.
Yeah.
My donor is, yes, I mean, he is mixed race in the sense that I think every African-American male is mixed race somehow.
You're true.
You know, and I could see the first days that people are just like, okay, is the father white?
And they don't know how to ask
find
you.
Yeah, so my grandmother the one time is like, yeah, because at least you found yourself a white man, and you know, because these black men are a problem. And then it's only when my dad's relatives came to visit, and they're like, no, but we've got people who look like this in on our side of the family. So they gave a story to it, and I do. I remember I've got an uncle with like green eyes. Mm-hmm. My aunt's son has got like freckles, and you know, so you're like, okay, you know, I can see how this could happen. So having the second one, I kept thinking, I wonder, because it's the same donor that I use for both of them, but they look so different. The second one was
born, your daughter.
Exactly, the second one looks like outside of the family fully. She's like
she's like real black.
She's like real black. So it's interesting. It's yeah.
Yeah, so the answer to that question is going to be a tricky one. I don't know I'm sure time is running out. At some point, you have to have come up with, what are you going to tell people? Do you have to tell them anything?
Mm.
And but they will ask. There's always going to be the bold ones who probably step out and just ask.
And maybe it's better if they ask. Some might have their own narrative, and then they will tell your children.
Exactly.
That narrative that they tell.
So that's actually the worry down the line. The ones who will be kind enough to want to tell the children what they think happened.
Mm. Yeah, but you don't have to figure that out right now.
Yeah, true. Anyway, we will figure it out. I'm sure we will. Anyway, I'm not so sure by some means we'll have figured it out at some point when it needs to be known.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, so one of my mantras these days is being kind to myself. It took me almost 2 years. I think when we first met, my daughter was about 2, I think. To actually be able to honestly say to people, I'm a single mother by choice. Because in my head, I still had this, did I fail? I never regretted having the children. But I always assumed that people will look at me and say, but this is unusual. Why would you do it that way unless there was something wrong with you? So you like for me, it took a lot of time for me to work through that for myself before I could be open and honest with people about the journey I took, because I'd internalized it. So be kind to yourself. Allow yourself the time.
It's true, CJ. You actually, I don't even think that thinking ends completely. Mm-hmm. You get to a point of being at peace with it, but you don't completely forgive yourself. You still think maybe it still comes across in your head as did I fail?
Mm.
But you learn to control it. You learn to like you're saying, be kind to yourself.
Mm.
Because I think by going through with the upbringing that we had, you it comes across as you failed to have children, and you failed to have a family, and you failed to get married, and then you had children by crooking the system.
Mm. Actually, that's a very interesting way of looking at it, by crooking the system. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we really have to be kinder to ourselves, because there's been a lot of internalizing of how things should have been.
Mm.
So this way that we went has left that feeling broken. Mm. And I think for me also, I'm still on a journey of forgiving myself and saying that's what actually happened, and you didn't fail.
Mm.
Although in my head, I'm sure there's a voice saying you did.
And it doesn't mean you don't love your children.
You do not. Oh, no, I totally, totally love my boys.
Yeah. It's just that there's also an identity, a self-identity issue that you've got to work through, because we grew up being told you will just have children. You'll have children. It was just you'll get married, you'll have children. No one ever said sometimes your body doesn't work. No one ever said if you leave it too late, you know, biological clock hasn't caught up with modern times.
Discussions that happen. I remember growing up with my mom, she never mentioned anything of that nature. Mm. My mom just wanted me to get married and have children. Mm. And she was actually uncomfortable when I started discussing anything about even having a guy at all in her life. I don't know how she thought you'd get married and have children. She was uncomfortable about having a guy at all. That discussion was never done, was never weighed with my mom.
Mm.
It was just not discussed. She was very uncomfortable with any men around me anyway.
Mm. But then by osmosis.
I'm telling you.
By osmosis, miracle prayer.
I was going to get married and have children, but she didn't want men around me.
Oh, man. No, but I mean, I really hope our children grow up in a different type of era that we can be more open about life and what happens in life
and
with them, right?
Information.
And information. Information. I mean, I'm still struck by the fact that you're 38, you're sitting in a doctor's room, and for the first time you are thinking about the fact that actually
I'm running out of time. How did I not know until I got to 38?
Yes.
And how did I run out of time? When I could have done something, I'm sure I could have done something, I ran out of time.
Mm.
And so so nobody ever told you. I know people you've heard the words biological clock.
Mm.
I had heard those words somewhere, but they were not really expounded on.
Mm.
You did hear them.
Mm.
But I think in my head, when they talked about biological clock, this biological clock of dying was somewhere near 50.
Yeah.
And it was actually a misconception.
Mm. Because you felt fine. It's not like you were saying, oh, I'm sick and therefore there might be a problem, or you still felt like who you were when you were 15 years before. Yeah. You
know? So I felt young. I didn't feel like there was anything wrong with me. I looked young according to me. So, I looked young according to me.
Well, look, you look younger now, post kids. I must say, you're looking really good.
Thank you. Oh, thanks again.
You're looking really, really good for someone who's literally just given birth months ago.
So that's how I felt at 39. So I did not know for the life of myself how I could have run out of eggs or anything like that, because I did not feel old.
Yeah.
And my old was, you're going to become menopausal. For me, it was just, you get to 50 and you get menopausal and then you stop.
Yeah.
There was no deterioration part.
Yes. Because we had so many stories of our mother's friends who in their 40s still fell pregnant, right?
Exactly.
Where is that? That like Lameki, the last child who came right at the end when everyone thought the factory had been closed.
Yeah, I think the missing information in my head was the deterioration part. Mm. There was no gradual deterioration.
Mm.
Nobody actually said it wasn't just a sudden switch off.
Mm.
There is going to be a gradual deterioration once you are in this particular age. You have less chance and so forth. I thought it was just a turn of the tap.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
Yeah. So you've gone through this. And, thank you for sharing your story, because I know it's been a long journey. You've been blessed with two beautiful boys. What would you say either to yourself 10, 20 years ago, or to someone listening to this show right now and thinking about this journey or going through this journey, what would you say to that person?
Well, you know what you would want to say? Be informed. But if I told myself the same thing 10, 20 years ago, what would that actually translate into? To be more informed, how do you get more informed? Because nobody actually tells you. And normally you're not even getting yourself to a place where you get that kind of information.
Mm.
Because it's not circulating unless you're looking for it.
Mm.
You actually have to be looking for this information on fertility for you to find it. It's not out there. What the people actually think we should be talking to are parents. They should be talking to their children about this stuff, to get it out there, because young women, young men don't generally get this information, at least in our African culture.
Mm.
They don't get this information, and it's not in circulation.
Mm.
And maybe the people to start these conversations are us parents.
Mm.
We need to talk about it. Talk about it, get that information out there that we now get at the doctors. Because, I mean, we shouldn't get to a point where a 38-year-old gets information at the doctors.
Yeah.
It should be information I should be able to get around about the same time I get puberty discussions.
Mm.
I should be able to be told, but by the time you get to this age, they start deteriorating.
Mm.
So I would say, as we discuss puberty, let's also discuss egg freezing options. I don't know, some options that are there. It's not just, of course, we're always discussing don't get pregnant, because that's the discussion that was just was just being run through our growing up. Just don't get pregnant. But then again, we should also tell them, but you should know that in the 30s, your eggs are going to probably be a struggle. So maybe in a couple of years, you need to start getting yourself tested. And of course, that's another thing you could tell, I'm thinking young women, like you're asking, what should we tell them? Get yourself tested in terms of hormones. If you have the idea of wanting to have children at some point along your life, just get tested. Know your hormonal levels so that you are informed. Mm. So that it's not too late for you to decide. You can decide not to have children if you decide, but at least know.
At least make an informed decision.
Exactly, know.
So in the same way that you go for your pap smear, maybe as you go for your pap smear, have regular checkups. And just make sure that, you know, hormones are still at the right levels, your egg count is still at the right levels, and be informed about what your options and alternatives are along the journey.
True. I think in your late 20s, you should start at least regularly getting fertility checks.
Mm.
Just like you're saying, just like you have your pap smears.
Yeah. And I think it should go for men as well.
So it's true. It's true.
Men as well, because part of the challenge with this conversation is, you know, the issue of infertility has been feminized, and we always assume that the person with the challenge is the woman. But I think there are more and more men who are also waiting.
And unfortunately, they're not discussing, and it's not discussed. It seems a bit taboo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, even when I've noticed that when there are social discussion groups on social groups, the Facebooks and everything, I have a feeling there's not much discussion happening among men. They, of course, discuss with their partners when IVF becomes a necessity, IUI becomes a necessity, but not among themselves as groups and as supporting each other. Like, this thing is real. It's there. It's not, you're not the only one. You haven't failed. It's happening everywhere. So, yeah, you're right. I think we need to get discussion going.
Yeah. I think that's a profound place to stop. To say this thing is real. It's happening everywhere. Because I remember those mornings at the fertility clinic, and I'd look around and it would be full. And I'd be like, but where are these people when I leave this space? Where are the people who can relate to what I'm going through, whom I can talk to? So I think that's a profound place to stop.
Thanks, AJ.
This is real. Thank you so much. I'm honored to have been a small part of the journey. And I am so, so, so happy for you. I know you are going to be such an awesome mom.
Thank you. Let's get the word out there.
Exactly. Thank you, Jasmine.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.